You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, I'm Lindsay Holiday, host of the History Tea Time YouTube channel and podcast. Katie and Nathan wanted me to let you know that this show is liberally sprinkled with colorful language. If profanity spoils your party, then this may not be the podcast for you. But if you enjoy expletives in your comedy history podcast, then I think you're going to love it. You may also like the taste of my podcast, History Tea Time, where I spill the tea on history. I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ plus royals from across the world, explore royal family trees, put modern royalty into historic context, and much more.
Hi, this is Katie.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Queens Podcast, the show about badass women in history.
Katie.
Oh my goodness. We are back to talk about some more Victoria Woodhull. Have you recovered from the scandal of her childhood?
Yes, and I'm back again. I'm ready for more.
Oh my goodness. We were hoping that we would have her entire life story out before the upcoming election. Since she is the first female to run for president. But y'all, this life has taken so many twists and turns.
Like, in her life, she had, like, five past lives.
Right! We are not even going to get to her run for president in this second episode.
She's extra.
She is so extra. That's why, like, when I keep hearing about people doing biopics on like the Tudor queens and Cleopatra, I'm like, that's interesting and all, but there are so many other women with like these banana life stories. And Victoria Woodhull is one of them.
But before we dive in, let's do some shout outs.
And we have our Patreon shout outs. We want to shout out Laura and Theo. Hey, Theo, we want to wish you and Hannah a very, very happy engagement.
Yes, that's so exciting. And also a shout out to Taylor and Alexis. Thank you to all of our Patreon supporters at every level. And thanks to all of our listeners. You guys are the reason we do what we do.
So where did we leave off? So Vicky escaped a super bad marriage and she has a new hubby and his name is Colonel Blood. I mean,
the Blood Colonel. It's very rock and roll.
I love it.
Yes.
And so her Blood Colonel and her sister Tennessee are heading to New York.
Yep.
And again, we're a little hazy on like the legality of ye old blood colonel marriage.
Yeah.
And we're not sure if there's like a valid divorce.
Yeah, there's no marriage certificate. But again, this back in a time when nothing was digitalized, it that might get lost because she wasn't a celebrity or anything yet. And there's no official divorce filing.
So it's basically like new mailbox, who dis?
So we don't know. We don't know if she actually divorced her first husband before marrying her second husband, but it's really not important.
Yeah, it doesn't fucking matter because she didn't like him anyway. So
she practiced free love, which a big part of that was, well, I don't feel like I'm emotionally married to that guy anymore. And now I'm emotionally married to this guy. So that's all that matters, which... you do you, girl. That's awesome.
Right? So while they were making their way to New York, the Colonel and Vicky get some time to make, you know, get to know each other better.
Yeah.
So you know, Victoria is like this really well-traveled woman, but she's not like super educated in that formal sense. So yeah. She really wouldn't be on top of like the to-dos of today.
She's lived in a bunch of places, but while she was living in San Francisco and Chicago and like all these important places where things are happening, she was so wrapped up in caring for like her special needs child, making sure that her drunk husband wasn't dead in the streets. But she didn't have time to like educate herself and get involved with civil things.
Make sure your husband's not drunk in the streets.
Make sure he's not dead, doing good. And so Blood is like giving her civic education, basically. And so she is telling him like, her beliefs about marriage. And she was like, I think we should be equal. I don't think I should have to bow down to you in a marriage. I don't think if I decide that, you know, if we decide we don't love each other, we shouldn't have to bring the law into it. And like every step of the way, he's like, yes.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
And it's just, she's just like blown away. He's like, yeah, this is already a theory. It's this theory called free love. And he's also like, do you know what the suffragettes are? And we don't know exactly how that conversation went. She probably went, I've heard of them, but I'm not super familiar. And so he's like, oh yeah, this is this whole movement of women that want to have equal rights to men and want the right to vote. You should get in with them. And she's like, I should get in with them. So
that sounds like a little bit of fun, but
that sounds like my thing. Yeah.
But quick side note about their relationship. So Mr. Blood really just seems to like admire Vicky for like who she is, like nothing more than that. So that must have made her feel like, you know, I'm Queen Bee, like I'm on top of the world. Right? I'm the exact opposite of what was in my last marriage where he made me feel like an idiot.
Like, yes, or even like her father, where like she was made to feel important, but she wasn't valued. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, who knew being treated well and valued makes you feel important and getting shit done?
Like, I mean, makes you have confidence. Who would have thunk it?
Mind blown.
It just really seems like he saw her potential. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he really believed that she could accomplish whatever she put her mind to. And so, yeah, like you said, who would have thunk it? It made her feel happy and made her do her best work.
She shined bright like a diamond.
Shine bright like a diamond. In case you haven't picked up, I like Colonel Blood.
They get back to NYC and Victoria says she was sent a vision of where to go to look for housing.
It's so extra. I love this. She's like, I saw a vision. I'm seeing an address in my mind. And it's like, did you maybe see it in this newspaper with the listings of
the
apartments?
The wanted ads.
And she's like, I saw it. The spirits are telling me where to go.
Gotta fucking love her.
I love it. They end up at, the address is 17 Great Jones Street, and it was a fully furnished apartment like she saw in her vision, aka the newspaper.
Oh my God. Gotta love her. It's a lot nicer than where she lived in Ohio. I mean, no yeah. Shade on Ohio.
Well, no, but
no shade
in,
on Ohio. But.
In everywhere else she's living in these like rickety, like, their place in Ohio was like falling apart. And then mm-hmm. she's living in like a decrepit apartment in San Francisco with her husband. So now they're getting this place that's like a furnished apartment. I mean, it's not a mansion, but it's really nice for their standards.
Yeah.
I Googled it, 17 Great Jones Street. It's now a crosswalk. It is not a thing that is there anymore.
Wah,
before wah. The time, it wasn't the slums. So step up.
Yay, Vicky.
Yes.
So they settle in, and by they, we mean Vicky, Tenny, Jimmy Blood, and Vicky's two kids. And before you know it, the Claflin clan finds them and enrolls One-Eyed Buck and Mama One-Eyed Roxy.
One-Eyed Buck and Foxy Roxy.
Yes. So along with a couple, her sisters came in there too.
Yeah, and their husbands and their kids. But like, what I think is really interesting is the dynamic has changed. Mm-hmm. So when she was this kid making all the money for the family and being abused, basically, she had no power. But now that it was her husband's name on the lease, even though that's still by our standards not great, but it's like, it's a power shift in dynamic. You know what I mean? That now it's like, y'all can't disrespect me. This is my house. This is my house. You were living here because I said you could.
Yeah, bitch, I can kick you out.
Exactly. So the power dynamic shifted. So that's, I'm happy for that for her. That's cool.
They really fit in this neighborhood. I mean, so she really found like this weird home and all of these noisy and tacky families. And so she really fit in here.
The book I have been reading to study for this is called Notorious Victoria. And they talk about, you know, back in Ohio, her big and noisy and disruptive family was viewed as such like a pain in the ass and no one, like they were such outcast. But in New York, all of the families were big and noisy and disruptive. So they didn't stand out, you know, it was like, okay.
Like, heaven, I'm in heaven. Okay, so time to work and make some money, honey. So
looking to do some work.
Sorry. Work. As a spiritualist, yes. And you know, spiritualists at the time, they're a dime a dozen. So it was going to like take some creativity to reinvent her career.
Yeah.
There were some rumors that Tennessee, you know, took some jobs that were, how shall we say, not good. And then maybe she's given handies like the cigar shop.
Yeah. Like spiritualism with a happy ending, maybe.
Oh, it's so bad.
A girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. I'm not judging.
Money.
You got to make your money somehow. So I don't know how Daddy Buck did this next thing, but thank God he did. He makes a connection with this guy. Nathan, maybe you've heard of him. Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Oh. That rich guy that did all the trains and shit.
Yeah. Anderson Cooper's great-great-great-grandmother or something. Yeah.
Lots of money.
Yes. If you're not from the U.S. or you're just not familiar with like early U.S. capitalism, Vanderbilt was the richest man in America at the time. Close to the richest man in the world. Like he...
Oh, easily, yeah.
Money. He's a rags to riches story. He started from the bottom. Now he's the richest man in the world. Did it all himself. His parents worked on railroads and he got like a little bit of money and invested in railroads and they took off.
Literally at the time of his death, this dude is worth in like today's money, $2.3 billion.
With a B. Honey.
Bitch. Yeah.
He did all right for himself.
B is for bitch.
B is for billions, bitch. It's Britney Billions, bitch.
Oh my God, I love it. So needless to say, he's done all right for himself.
He's done all right for himself. But because he was born to like a dirt poor family, he never really felt comfortable with like the upper crust of society. So that must be how One-Eyed Buck got his foot in the door. I still don't fully understand.
I'm just picturing this guy with one eye hobbling into the bar being like, hey, I heard you're Cornelius Vanderbilt.
So Vanderbilt's wife of many years had just died and his own health wasn't doing great. He was getting up there in years, you know.
He's not a fresh young chicken anymore.
No. He didn't trust conventional medicine and doctors. which being that her first husband, Cannon, was a doctor, I don't
quote unquote. This is a very, very loosely word doctor.
Well, that was all doctors back then. I don't blame him one bit for being like, I don't know that I trust you guys. So he was looking, he had also been using spiritualism like mediums to talk to his parents for a couple of years already at this point. So he was like looking for alternative medicine options.
He ain't afraid of no ghosts.
No.
Like he's looking for answers, basically. But you know, he was into this practice that we call magnetic healing, which makes me think of like in the early 90s, you had like a magnetic bracelet and it was supposed to like heal your problems.
I don't think that's the same thing.
But I mean, it's kind of.
Tennessee had been practicing this for a while. Do you remember in the last episode when we talked about when she would do like the spiritual healing to try to pull cancer out of people?
Mm-hmm.
That was magnetic healing. But then do you remember how her dad would then sell them like a cancer healing elixir that would then burn their skin off? That wasn't part of it. They did not try to sell Cornelius Vanderbilt the lion opium poison.
Well, that's good because you might have had a lawsuit or two.
Yes. So somehow Buck gets in front of Vanderbilt and he is like, I don't know how. Do you think they were running in the same circles? Do you think they went to the same church?
He's a snake oil salesman, honey. He can find his way into any circle. Like he's just
gonna
that.
Slither his way in. I'm a snake.
I'm a snake. Oh my God.
Somehow he eventually gets in front of Vanderbilt and he tells Vanderbilt, I have these two little girls. Which is gross.
Ew, gross.
Also, Victoria's like 30 at this point.
She ain't little.
She's not little. No. But I've got these two little girls. And he's like, the older sister is an experienced medium. And like, the spirits are just dying to talk through her. They cannot get enough of her. And also, she's super pretty. So bonus. And then he was like, and then her younger sister is an experienced spiritual healer with magnetic healing.
It's magnetic hands.
Yes, magnetic hands. She does that, the healing massage or what the fuck ever. And if you thought the first sister was pretty, hold on to your butts because the second sister's even prettier. Which, side note, they always say, everything always says that Tennessee was the prettier sister. But when I look up pictures of them, because there were, you know, actual photography at the time, they look like the exact same person to me.
Yeah, they honestly look exactly alike, except...
Exactly alike to me.
Obviously, Victoria is a little bit older, because she's the older sister.
Yeah. She was like 6 years older. So, yeah.
And you know, there's some creepy old men. So obviously the younger one's always the prettier one. It's like, no.
I mean, they look...
They're the similar.
From the beauty standards of the time, Tennessee was considered the more beautiful. But anyway, Vanderbilt's like, two sisters that can help me with my spiritualism. Yeah, let's do it. On board.
Y'all, I shit you not, it fucking worked. So like, by 18, these sisters are like the main spiritual advisors to the richest guy in the fucking United States.
Bananas.
And not only are they just spiritualists, they're like BFFs, y'all. Like,
they're tight. They are like in the Vanderbilt inner circle.
Oh, by the way, Tenny becomes his mistress. That might be nice. I mean, it's debated. It's debated on
people are like, it's debated if she became his mistress. No, she would go to his office and sit on his lap.
Yeah, that's not debatable.
He called her his little sparrow.
Again with the word little. Like,
I don't know. Maybe she was short. I don't know anything about their heights. I don't know.
They're
fucking. I have no doubt in my mind that Tennessee and Vanderbilt were fucking.
So also like his house staff said that she would spend the night with him like all the time. So
yeah, they would never find them in the same bed, but they would find her in a bed there, naked. And it was just like, like, obviously he had gone off to another bed or something after all the fucking.
But they're fucking.
They're definitely fucking. Some people say that he proposed to Tennessee and that she said no because she was like, I'm going to lose all my rights. I'm going to lose da-da-da. I don't know if I believe that because obviously he's going to die years and years and years before you because he's in his 60s and you're in your 20s.
He's old.
So just take the money, honey. So I don't think he proposed marriage to her. Also because he had like a big family of people. He ended up marrying a distant cousin that was about Tennessee's age, but then kept Tennessee as a mistress. And I think like his family never would have let him marry that bitch down from Ohio, you know?
Yeah, a spiritualist from Ohio? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no shade, but...
anyway.
Rabbit hole complete.
Rabbit hole.
There's plenty of them that you can go down in this story.
Oh my God, so many rabbit holes.
It's true. So as this relationship with Vanderbilt evolves, he starts teaching them about the world of ka-ching, ka-ching. Money, finance.
Money. Ka-ching, ka-ching.
And Victoria kind of becomes a little bit obsessed about it. She's like, well, if I can make this $1 into $100, why not?
Which I feel like being the daughter of a con man, it makes sense. You're like, wait, it's like gambling, but it's legal.
It's so true.
And also she's smart. She,
yeah.
Education can get you so far, but natural curiosity is a whole different thing. And I feel like she's just got that. Do you agree? She's just kind of
got that from her dad. She's got that from her upbringing. So literally Vanderbilt is like giving her stock tips. And then Vicky would end up passing those on to her husband, who would then go and like invest the money in the stocks. And then, oh my God, we have so much money now.
Is that insider trading? I don't understand what insider trading is. I don't understand the stock market.
I can kind of explain insider trading to you, but this is a whole nother rabbit hole.
Well, don't. Is it insider trading then?
No.
Okay.
Insider trading would just basically be like, hey, our stocks for our company are going to go down this month. So take your
okay.
Money
so just getting tips from a rich guy.
It's a financial advisor.
Okay.
He's a financial advisor.
Okay. Either way, now the sisters have an income from working with Vanderbilt as a spiritual advisor. And then they also have an income coming in from the stock market. So watch out, world. Here we fucking come. These sisters start to make a name for themselves because there are no other women trying their hands at finance, or at least like doing it so openly. Most women that like want to invest send their husbands or their brothers to do it. Well, they did have to send the blood colonel to do it because women were not allowed on the trading floor.
Ugh.
Bag of dicks. Bag of dicks. So, there was one story about like Cornelius Vanderbilt gave them some like really hot tip, and she just sent Tennessee like out like, go buy the stock or trade the stock. Again, I don't understand how it works, but like, so Tennessee ran out there to do the thing with the stock, and they wouldn't let her in, and so she had to go find Colonel Blood to go do it for her. And it's like, what? Are my boobs gonna distract everybody on the floor so much that no one's gonna be able to focus on finance?
She showed too much of her wrist.
Oh my God, those dainty little wrist.
Gasps. Oh, I can't breathe. So it's also worth mentioning that they like start taking liberties with their backstory.
Oh,
so,
yeah, they do.
It's not, I, that's an understatement. Yeah. So when they meet someone, they would be like, hey, my dad was a lawyer. You know, we grew up helping him in his law firm. He was a snake oil salesman. Bitch.
Yes.
He was one-eyed Buck.
But Buck did call him, like, if you go to Buck's Wikipedia page that exists, lawyer is one of the professions listed. And I feel like, yeah, because you need to know how the law works if you're breaking it so much.
Also, it's basically like getting the doctor degree.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, oh. So I guess there's one thing being like, yeah, our dad was a lawyer. We learned law and finance from him. But then they would also be like, oh, we went to such and such private school. Bitch, no, you didn't. You went to school for 3 years off and on. Like, no, you didn't. But, you know, I understand why they did it.
Yeah.
And then they kept most of their family very, very much out of the public eye.
As you would, because Uncle Buck's only got one eye. So Buck would often go out with them when they do like social events or like networking with like Colonel Blood. You know, they were meeting people in the finance world, trying to do some insider trading.
Well, Buck was so good at networking. He was so good at schmoozing people, you know, and he knew that he would get a cut from whatever his daughters got, or at least a free place to live in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He just knew how to grift. And be like, yeah, I'm a lawyer. I'm a legitimate businessman. And it just made Tennessee and Victoria look more legit on top of it. So I get why they did it, even though it was false.
Yeah, right. So Vicky is starting to make a name for herself. She wants to get more involved in this suffragette movement. I mean, girls, this is 1869. So it's like, prime time for suffragettes. It's really interesting that she didn't want to like get involved until she had connections and money. So it was like,
I do think that's interesting. Let's talk about that for a second, mm-hmm. if you don't mind. Because she could have joined the suffragette movement as a no one, but she wanted to wait until she had something to contribute. Don't you, like, she wanted to wait until she had some clout, until she was friends with the fucking richest man in the country.
Exactly.
I think that's interesting that she wanted to bring some clout before she got there.
Yeah, I think she wanted the tiara before she walked into the room. Because everybody's a queen.
There we go. So she makes her way to Washington, D.C. and attends the first National Female Suffragette Convention. While she got more into the movement, she was less and less impressed with the movement.
Oh, this is a whole nother rabbit hole.
This is a whole nother rabbit hole that we will try to keep as concise as possible, yes, while still moving the story forward. Though I would like to note, this is one of the reasons that this turned into a three-part episode instead of a two-part episode, is because there are so many major players in this story that comes up that we could just be like, oh, and then so she met Susan B. Anthony and move on and assume.
Casual.
But instead, we did want to do like a slight dive into who these people were.
Because they do deserve a voice.
Like Cornelius Vanderbilt, you know, like we needed to explain who he was. So anyway, first of all, so she gets to the movement.
First of all, she was like, it's all people that already support the movement. So what's the fucking point of having a bunch of hippies gather around together and be like, yay, we love pot. Like, woo!
That is, it's not exactly on the nose, but yes.
General idea.
But no, she's like, what is the point? If everybody, we all agree on the same thing and everybody here at this convention already agrees on the same thing, and all the newspapers covering it are special interest, we already agree on the same thing.
So we are literally preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to preach to those sinners, honey.
Right. Second, the movement was broken into factions. So basically, today we'd call them the liberals and the conservatives. The liberals were run by the aforementioned Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton.
I still like to say Caddy because it reminds me of Mean Girls. Yes, yes. It's spelled like Caddy. I'm like, was that a reference, Tina Fey?
It could have been. Oh my gosh.
It might be.
But if you know anything about the American suffragist movement, if you know one name from the movement, you know Susan B. Anthony. If you know two names from the movement, you know Elizabeth Cannon Staton. These two women were like the Beyoncés of the movement, basically.
Katie's mind just blew. Beyoncés.
And of the conservative faction, there was a number of people, but the people we're going to focus on is a cluster of siblings, the Beecher family.
This is a whole nother rabbit hole. Like, this is whatever it's like. It's basically just like women's suffrage movement. There's some great things that happened out of it. And there's some like, ooh.
Yes. Just like anything else in history. Yes. It's complicated.
Yes.
The Beecher family, the person you probably know off the top of your head is Harriet Beecher Stowe. She wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah. And they're like a huge abolitionist family. So yay.
Yeah.
And they wanted women to have the right to vote. So yay.
Yay. Double yay.
They had some other beliefs.
They didn't believe in divorce, which for the time, I get it. But they didn't believe in equality in marriage. It was still very much like traditional. And so there's like this huge divide in the suffragist movement. I wrote in my notes on my Kindle, LOL, if the conservatives hate divorce, they're really going to hate Vicky. Foreshadowing.
Oh my God, it's so true. I went down so many rabbit holes with this, like reading about the different factions and being like, why did they hate each other? It's like, oh, it's like
yeah,
that.
And they're all going for the same end result.
Idea.
Right? Yeah. Without digressing too much, let's discuss some of these people because they are important.
Yes.
And again, I just always assume everyone knows the same things I do. But if you're not from America, you might not know Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah. So Susan B. Anthony is Beyonce of the movement.
She is Beyonce. She is the big, like, if you know, to this day, when women go and vote, they go and put their I voted stickers on her headstone.
Work, bitch.
Yeah.
And then her partner in crime is Elizabeth Cady Stanton, which is basically like Lady Gaga.
Yes. That's a very good. Yes.
Yes, Gaga.
Yeah, Gaga.
Yeah, so they're a pretty big deal, bitch.
And so the Beecher family, again, like we said, they are traditionalist. So, like, gonna clutch their pearls if you bring up sex, divorce, birth control. But they do fundamentally believe that we're all people, so we should all have a voice in a democracy. Mm-hmm. So, cool. Harriet Beecher Stowe, even if you've never read Uncle Tom's Cabin and you grew up in America, you probably know the name. But at the time, her brother was the bigger celebrity, and his name was Henry Ward Beecher. Hank Beecher was a famous evangelical preacher. So he
Preacher
was,
Beecher.
He was the Preacher Beecher. And this dude, so he was in an unhappy marriage. And he was a ladies' man. He had hoes in every area code. He has like, this dude fucks a lot.
Did like, they have like area codes back then? If it wasn't area codes, he had a hose in different zip codes.
Did they even have zip codes? I don't even know. He had, this guy fucks is what I'm getting at. He had lots of mistresses. So let's put a pin in that. Drop that pin, and we're going to visit that in episode 3. But just remember, the Preacher Beecher
has hoes.
He fucks. He has hoes. Yes.
So Vicky thinks this divide in the suffragist movement is like fucking dumb, because I also agree it's kind of fucking dumb.
Yeah.
And she's like, y'all, you're doing this wrong. Like, this is all wrong. She really doesn't want to like make friends with people in the movement, but she disagrees with the way that they're doing it. Not what they're doing, but the way they're doing
it. Yeah.
So she goes home and tells her punk rock husband, Colonel Blood, and she's like, was just like a bunch of these people like arguing amongst themselves, and they never really had a plan.
She describes it as a teacup hurricane, and I don't know the fuck that means, but it sounds like an awesome band name.
So she's a little disenfranchised by this movement, is totally. What we're getting at. Real quick side note about how the general press viewed the suffragist movement. They called it unfeminine, man-hating, ugly women that can't get husbands, so they're taking it out by wanting to vote.
Side note, most suffragists had husbands. Not that that fucking matters. Like, I mean, Susan B. Anthony didn't, but
you're afraid of a bunch of old bitter ladies voting?
But it's just so annoying that throughout in every country that the suffragist movement was a big deal, they portray them as these women that can't get husbands, and it's like, okay, 80% of them did have husbands.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that's what they had to do, because guess what? History's a bag of dicks.
A bag of dicks. Anyway, one of the newspapers wrote calling them mummified and fossilated female labor under the feelings of strong hatred towards men. Victoria was like, we need to rethink our PR plan here.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. We need a Kim Kardashian makeover.
Yes. So Vicky comes home and she's like talking to Blood about this. And she's like, there's this inner fighting. They're approaching it all wrong. All they're talking about is the vote, 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 vote. But until there is a fundamental change in relationships between men and women, between husband and wife, in our society, what's going to change? Because a husband could be like, who are you going to vote for? And if the wife is going to be like, I'm going to vote for the guy you're not voting for, he can legally put her in a mental institution.
Yeah, literally. Like, this is not a joke.
Like, so she's like, who cares if we have the vote? If, like, you we have don't have equality.
You have to shift the way your thinking is and be like, okay, this has to be practical. Like, we have to make this work in the foundation.
She's like, they need to see us as equals before they're gonna give us any rights.
Yeah, and then that's like, women are still doing that right now. Like, you want to be seen as a woman, as a partner, or a professional with another man. But right now, you probably aren't considered that. Like, and it's true. Like, yeah. It's sad, but, you know, some things will never change, but yeah, we are making them change.
So Vicky is still learning and growing in her, like, education about the stock markets from Vanderbilt. And in 1869, there was, like, this huge stock market crash. They were like, fuck, that's a big portion of our money gone. And Vanderbilt goes, it'll come back. Like, because everybody was panicking, selling their stocks at super, super cheap. He was like, this is going to bounce back. Mm-hmm. Just go buy all the cheap, cheap stocks.
And that's what they did. And at first, they lost a shitload of money, like $100,000 shitload of money. Yeah, and that's like...
In 1870s money. That's like millions of dollars.
Yeah, my butthole is clenched. Woo. And after about 2 months, they ended up buying up all those stocks and making $700,000.
Yeah.
$700,000.
And that's, again, in their money. So in our money, I believe that's like $23 million.
It's a shitload of money.
Bitch better have my money.
Bitch better have my 1870s money.
Yes.
Stacks on stacks on stacks.
Stacks on stacks on stacks. Making that coin, y'all. What we're getting at is she is now rich, bitch.
Yes.
Well, I mean, she's sharing it with her husband and her sister. But still,
yeah, she's only like 31.
They do tonight.
Yes. Yeah. So she looks at her husband and her sister and she's like, let me check my bank account. Doesn't seem that good. I think I know how to make men see me as an equal. Do that money, honey.
Yeah. So they start a brokerage firm, and it is the first financial firm started by women in the United States.
That's huge. That's huge.
I need a moment to process this hugeness.
Let's take a little bit of a break.
Yes. I'll be right back with you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore all of the weird little questions and conspiracies of the universe in our new podcast, Mystery of Everything. Everything has an explanation.
We hope.
But that is what we're here to figure out. We will dive into the science behind many popular conspiracy theories, such as vaccines causing autism, flat earth theory, and was the moon landing fake? And if so, why the heck would anyone even do that?
But it's not just conspiracies. There's a lot of cool mysteries that we will attempt to use science to explain, such as near-death experiences, what made the Vikings go berserk, and can I control my co-host with MK Ultra?
Wait, what? Anyway, make sure to check out the Mystery of Everything podcast everywhere where you find your podcasts.
All right, y'all, this was a bananas fucking time. There had never been a female stockbroker before, let alone one that owned her own fucking firm, you know?
Power broker.
I know.
Yeah.
She spoke to a newspaper at the time and basically was like, women are shamed out of taking part in this kind of thing by men, but I'm here to show you that a woman can do a man's job. At the time, now that seems like, oh yeah, that's something women were saying in the 80s. Yeah. This was the 1770s or the 1870s.
But it was still 150 years ago.
That is so, like, it was at that time such like a revolutionary thought that like a woman can do whatever job a man can do. They move forward with their firm and they call it Woodhill, Kaplan and Co. And the Co was Colonel Blood. Because again, women couldn't go on to like the stock trading, like
without rounds. A man.
Yes. Yeah,
without a man behind you. So you had and company, which is and my husband.
Yes. Because bag of dicks.
Bag of dicks. Mystery's
bag of dicks. Mystery's bag of dicks. On February 5th, 1870, their firm opened. And it was the fanfare. Like, yeah. It makes me think of, what it made me think of, if I'm being honest, is, you know how Kim Kardashian right now was, like, doing law school?
Yeah.
If the Kardashian sisters opened a law firm is, like, what it made me think of. Like, the fanfare. Everyone was, like, all up. Like, it was this huge to-do.
Yes! Yeah.
So just the novelty of it obviously brought them in more people than it usually would. But there's no such thing as bad press, right?
Right. So Tinny and Vicky adopted this style that everyone talked about a lot to do.
It was so scandalous.
Yes. They wore almost the equivalent of the business suit or the power suit for, you know, the 80s woman. You know, mm-hmm. They had that, you know, tailored jackets, little, you know, ties on them, little short skirts, quote unquote.
You can't see Nathan's quote unquote short skirts. When we say they wore short skirts, it means to above their ankles.
Oh, gasp!
Side note about those short skirts. New York City at this time had almost as many horses as people. Horses just shit in the streets.
Yeah.
They just piss in the streets. One time I wore bell bottoms with my family to a Renaissance fair, and it rained really, really bad.
Ew.
And I was walking around in the muddy grounds of the Renaissance fair, and by the end of the day, just like the gross of the wet, muddy water had gotten up to my knees. And so like whenever people are like, I can't believe they wanted to wear skirts above their ankles. It's like, yeah, because they didn't want horse shit up to their knees.
Yeah,
like, everybody should have been worried. Men should have been in high waters. Everybody in New York City. But it was very provocative that they wanted to show their ankles.
Oh, yes. Oh. So a lot of people were against it, obviously, and would come and like taunt them with threats, because that's usually what happens when people are dicks. But when you have, you know, Cornelius Vanderbilt,
maybe you've heard of him,
in your back pocket as a backer, you know, he's talking you up. So pretty much gets rid of anybody who's a naysayer.
So let them taunt. Let them hate and watch them hate and let the money pile up. As Fitty Sims says,
haters mean you're doing something right.
Exactly.
So funnily enough, at the time, he wasn't like an official investor, though he probably fronted over a lot of money to get this started.
Cornelius Vanderbilt was not an official investor, but they had a portrait of him hanging in their lobby.
So he was.
So it was like, Cornelius is watching over you. Choose your next steps wisely.
So the press fucking loved this.
They loved it.
Yeah, they coined Vicky as the queen of finance.
So she is a queen.
What a better name. The queen of finance.
Not too shabby. They did pretty well for themselves too. I mean, they were not the most successful financial firm on Wall Street, but they did a good job, is what I'm getting at. Like, mm-hmm. they were more than a novelty, but like at the end of the day. So, but they were also, they had a back door for women to come in.
Oh, you can call me by my back door.
Mm. I really love that. There's two things.
I do.
There's two reasons they had the back door. One, wealthy widows with all this money, they were still discouraged from making their own investments. They were expected to give their money over to their sons or their, you know, like whatever male relative. But some of them were like, no, I want to invest it on my own. And they didn't want to be discriminated against. So they'd come in the back door. And another one, a big industry that they represented was madams.
That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense. You got a woman with a lot of money.
That's another reason for their back door. And again, we don't discriminate. Make that money, honey.
Backdoor guests are best.
Yes.
So, of course, this was not all good press. And Tennessee got into a lot of trouble because she had some unpaid debts. I want to say gambling debts, but I don't know that for sure. But she had some debts in Chicago.
I think it was probably some gambling debts, but there was probably all kinds of other shit. We don't know what she did.
She owed a lot of money. Yeah. So the debtors end up showing up in New York, and they're like, ha ha, gotcha, found ya. And so Vicky and Tenny, they literally are like,
clearly you have the wrong person.
I don't know who you're talking to right
now.
We
don't know her.
Yeah, who's new mailbox? Who dis?
Yes.
So obviously there has to be someone in Chicago with the same names as us.
Out of the charity of our own hearts, we will pay this debt of this poor woman from Chicago who couldn't pay her own debts and had to pretend to be us. And they were like, no, it was you. Because it's not like Tennessee's name is like Jane Smith.
No, it's true.
Tennessee Claflin. There ain't a whole bunch of them flopping about. But they're like, no, there seems to be some misunderstanding here. And they're like, well, it's a woman named Tennessee Claflin who fits your exact description. And they're like, we'll pay your debts out of charity for this woman who is using my name. And everyone was just like, we don't believe you, but okay.
So the story was published about Tennessee owing all the money in Chicago, and it was published. And then Harriet Beecher Stowe. She bought an extra space right beneath the little publishing story and was like, I'm going to write about careers that are suitable for women.
And guess which one of them wasn't? It was stockbroker. It was like, careers that are suitable for women. Mother, period.
Oh, that shady bitch.
Yeah, so that really set kind of like the Beecher family against the Laughlin Woodhull family feud.
Susan B. Anthony came and, you know, profiled their firm for her paper, which was exactly the crowd that Vicky wanted, you know, running on in.
Yeah.
But then she gets that paper and realized it was a newspaper only about feminists and only about suffragist issues. And she was like, again.
Like she'd been annoyed with before. It was like, we're preaching to the fucking choir here. The only people getting this paper about women's issues are people that are already interested in women's issues. Mm-hmm. We need to make a paper that reaches across the aisle.
Yeah, it needs to reach Becky in Arizona.
Yes. So she's like, I'm going to start my own fucking paper. And they call it the Woodhull Claflin Weekly. It got 20,000 subscribers, which for the time...
It's not bad. It's not bad. And so what they focused on, you know, they primarily focused on women's issues, but they also published stuff about finance, surprise, yeah. Spiritualism, surprise,
yeah.
Abolitionist, surprise, and vegetarianism.
That one did actually surprise me.
And Katie was like, where can I sign up for this
newspaper? I like all of these things. But no, it was just so interesting. They were just being like, because so many other special interest papers at the time focused in on one special interest. And this one, it practiced what she preached. She was like, we need to become equals with men. Well, men are talking about finance. Men are talking about, you know, and so they made sure to have men writers on their paper, whereas
Susan B. Anthony's
was mainly just other women or other feminists, which really I think is a great idea because
you got to incorporate regular
make
people.
Allies. You got to make allies. Yeah,
exactly. So the primary writers for the paper are Vicky, Tenney, and Colonel Blood. And, you know, they would take the submissions from, you know, anyone else that wanted to, like, write in about stuff so long as, you know, as part of their brand, the Free Love brand.
Yeah, Free Love was a regular topic, so it was a little bit controversial. One man that wrote for the paper was this guy named Theodore Tilton. So do you remember in the last episode where I said that her first biographer wrote about her being a green leaf and her family being a caterpillar?
That's a very deep statement.
So that biographer is this guy, Tilton.
So he has a way with words.
He has a way with words. And he joins their newspaper and he becomes very kind of like Blood, just being like, wow, this woman is amazing. So there are some disputes about their relationship. The book that I read that I mentioned earlier, Notorious Victoria, there's no disputes in there. She apparently straight up told somebody like, yeah, he's my lover. And remember,
been doing this for years.
Yeah. Her and Blood believe in free love. They weren't super open about it because that wasn't a time when you could be. It still would be a hard time to be a politician or something and have like a free love relationship.
Yeah.
So they were both probably having affairs with each other's consent.
Mm-hmm.
So his name survives as one of her major biographers, and we're gonna go down a rabbit hole real quick, which I swear I swear to you, Nathan, do you promise to believe me that I swear to you? I swear to you, this rabbit hole is gonna be super relevant to the next episode.
Oh, I believe you.
So Tilton was married to a woman that cheated on him. They were not in a free love relationship, so it broke his heart when he found out that she was pregnant by another man, as it would.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good thing to have over breakfast tea.
No, and the man that she was pregnant by was a famous preacher.
Preacher, breacher?
I don't know. We'll talk about it next time. And so Tilton and his wife were separated, but they never did like a legal separation. They never did like a legal divorce because they didn't want to bring that scandal into their lives.
But he's single, ready to mingle.
He's single, ready to mingle
on the dating apps.
In his heart, maybe not legally. Yes. Anyway. So that's my rabbit hole that might be relevant at some other point.
Maybe. Anyway, Vicky is killing it.
She's doing such a good job.
She's looking around her apartment full of the Claflins, and she's like, let me upgrade ya. Auto need upgrade, to upgrade ya. So they're moving on up
to a mansion.
That's how the story goes, right?
I know. Can you imagine starting your life in like the shittiest town, not the shittiest town, the shittiest
home
in just like a backwater town, and then moving into a 4-story mansion in the middle of New York?
Bitch, please. And that's a positive bitch, please.
I made it.
So it was called the Murray Mansion, and it's on 15th East 38th Street. So the mansion, again, is like no longer there, like her other house.
Googled it, though. What's there right now is like a little shopping center, and there's a Victoria's Secrets in it, which I love because her name is Victoria.
I see what you did there.
So the extended family, they stayed back in the apartment, but her and Blood and the kids move into the 4-story mansion, as one would, if that's an option.
Yeah.
But yeah, the neighborhood, they weren't into them. They were like, who is this free love lady?
Who are these hippies moving on to my lot?
We don't want them in our debutante society. They just ignored them. They were like,
And guess what? She's like, middle fingers up. Tell them, boy, bye.
She was like, oh, have you seen my bank account? No? Fuck you. Fuck all y'all.
Love it. So there's only one problem. Remember her first husband, you know, the doctor who wasn't really a doctor?
Canning.
Canning.
Sir drinks a lot.
And Sir drinks a lot. Shows up and dude is dying.
Yeah, he's got like a liver disease or like...
Because he's been drinking, passed out in the street too much. And the last few years have not been really good on him. And he's really got nowhere to go. And so he's like, can you take me in? And she's obviously not a heartless bitch. So she's like,
it's the father of her children.
How can you?
And he's living on the streets. You would literally have to be, if you've got all this and the father of your children is living on the streets, you would have to be a heartless bitch to just be like, bye.
So yeah. I don't want to say like she took them in as charity. She just did it because she just felt like you just have to kind of do that. Yeah. And Canning is like actually really good with their special needs son Byron.
So
having him there wasn't a bad thing, especially for someone who's special needs, to have a familiar face to help you through those things.
And like I feel like Victoria never thought that this would ever be a scandal because she's always taken in family, you know what I mean?
And selling lion opium.
No, she didn't do that. Her dad did that. But no, I just don't think she ever thought for a minute that taking in her deadbeat ex-husband would ever be a scandal. Foreshadowing. Huh.
It is.
But she was just like, what? Was I expected to let him die on the streets? It's the father of my children, you know?
Yeah, I just married that guy not a hot minute ago, and he had my kids, so I can't do anything about it.
I think it shows her level of empathy. She could have just let him die on the streets.
But she didn't. She's grown.
Look, I'm in. She grown. Yeah.
She woke. So now Victoria wants to do something big to bring attention to this suffragist movement that's going on.
Well, now she's got the money. She's got the name. She's got presence. Yeah.
Yes. So she lands a speaking spot to the House of Representatives at a congressional committee.
This is huge.
Bitch.
It's fucking huge. A woman has never spoken at a congressional committee before. This is such a big fucking deal.
Yes. So she's like the first female stockbroker, first woman to speak in front of Congress,
She's got big clit energy is what's going
yes,
on.
Big yes, big clit energy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the woman of the suffragist movement showed up in droves. Like they're like pulling up in their...
Who is this nobody
yes,
that none of us have ever heard of that has a spot speaking in front of a congressional committee?
So they're all pumped up. They're all jazzed. She's now being like painted up as this like up and coming face of the woman suffragist movement, which is a really powerful endorsement to have.
And like all the big hitters showed up. You know, all the people we've discussed before. Susan B. Anthony was there. The Preacher Beachers were there. Elizabeth Cady Stanton was there. Everybody was there. It was like a big fucking...
How must she have felt? Like, how would she have felt in this ambience?
The thing is, I didn't put it in the notes because I didn't think we'd have time to go into it, but fuck it. There was actually an event already planned for that day that she didn't know about. And they canceled the event to come and see. Like, there was already like a rally. She was like, I don't know. There's not Facebook. I don't know when your fucking events are. They canceled their event to all come watch her. Like all the movers and shakers. So it was a big, big, big fucking deal.
I'm going to dust off the shoulders.
Get that dirt off your shoulders.
Yes, bitch. So like Vicky stands in front of everybody and is like, you know, she argues that this is what's really powerful. She argues that women already had the right to vote mm-hmm. because of the Civil War and the 14th and 15th Amendments. Mm-hmm. Go read them if you haven't, but the 14th says the 14th says that if you are anyone that's a natural born citizen of the United States can vote, and the 15th Amendment says that every citizen has the right to vote.
Well, the 14th Amendment says if you were born in America, you're a citizen.
Yes.
And then the 15th Amendment says that if you're a citizen, you have the right to vote. And so this was meant to be applied, if you don't know anything about the American Civil War. So like enslaved people, they went from being property to citizens. So if you were born in America, you're a citizen, whereas before you were property. And if you're born in America, you're a citizen, now you have the right to vote.
So and she so used that law to basically say, well, every person has the right to vote. Am I not a person?
I was born in Ohio. Last time I checked, that was America. I'm a citizen. Well, say no. They were like, well, women don't pay taxes. So, and she's like, I have this newspaper and this brokerage. Like,
I'm making coin.
I pay plenty of fucking taxes. So I have the right to vote already. And they all went.
That is a direct quote from the white men. From the white men in the 1870s.
Yes. It's so.
So.
It's so fucking frustrating.
Yes, it is.
Because then they went and changed the wording of the fucking amendments to be like all men are born as citizens.
Bag of dicks.
Jess. So while her speech didn't change any lawmakers' minds, it got lots of press coverage. I think she knew that she wasn't going to walk in and be like, we already have the right to vote. And they were just going to be like, oh my God, you're right.
Okay.
She knew there was going to be pushback, but all the newspapers covered it. And I think that's what she was really going for. Mm-hmm. And Susan B. Anthony wrote of her at the time, if it takes youth, beauty, and money to capture Congress, Victoria is our girl. Susan B. Anthony would later change that, but let's just bask in the glory.
So her congressional hearing was in January. So in April of that same year, she writes to the New York Herald and asks them to publish a letter that she had handwritten, you know, please and thank you. And that letter was to announce that she would be putting in her candidacy for the president of the United States.
A person with a vagina.
Running
for president.
How can you do this? Keska say.
But the vagina. Won't the vagina get in the way of the voting? Of the brain?
How can you politic with boobs?
Vagina.
And vagina. How can you?
Chromosomes. You can move? Hysteria. How does one do it?
So she's all of like 32 years
she's
old.
She's only 32 years old, which is technically illegal. You do have to be 35 to become president. And also she's a woman, and there is technically no law in the books against a woman running for president. Ugh. But there is technically someone under 35, a law against that becoming president. But she's like, fuck it, doing it anyway.
So in the Herald, she wrote, "While others wished for a good time coming, I worked towards it. While others argued for equality with men, I proved it was my business."
All valid points, Vicky. So we're going to put a pin in this, and we're going to be back in about 2 weeks. After that 2 weeks, we are going to take a little break for Thanksgiving, but then we'll be back after that. So thanks for joining us. Nathan, I can't wait to find out what happens.
I already know what happens, and it's great. Because I can read books. Cheers, bitches.
Cheers, bitches.
So thanks for listening. If there's something you want to hear, just like hit us up.
You can email us at queenshistorypodcast@gmail.com.
Find us on Twitter. We're at queens_podcast. Follow us on Facebook.
Thanks, guys, for listening.
Cheers.
Bye, girl.
Clink, clink. Mwah.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.